morning, Hunterdon. This is Big C coming to you from HunterdonChamberRadio.com at the studio offices of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce in Flemington, New Jersey. Good Morning Hunterdon kicks off your day by providing you with local news, traffic, and weather, as well as light topics through Vitamin C, Wake Up Call, and Chamber Chat. I also have many guests focusing on Hunterdon County community, business, and education. Listen to me every weekday morning from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Good Morning Hunterdon, HunterdonChamberRadio.com.
Good afternoon. The weather this afternoon is mostly sunny with a high near 72 with a south wind of 11 to 13 miles per hour. Tonight we have showers, mainly after midnight, low around 56. South wind 8 to 11 miles per hour, chance of precipitation is 90%. New precipitation amounts between a tenth and a quarter of an inch possible. Tuesday, showers likely mainly before 8 a.m., partly sunny with a high near 74. West wind around 8 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation is 60%. New precipitation amounts of less than a tenth of an inch possible. Tuesday night, mostly clear with a low around 49. South wind around 5 miles per hour, becoming calm in the evening. Wednesday, mostly sunny with a high near 74. Light and variable wind becoming northeast around 5 p.m., 5 miles per hour in the morning.
Lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. Let me repeat, lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. This is not a crazy diet or exercise program, no drugs, hormones, or shots. You can lose 20 to 45 pounds in 40 days with Nutrimost Resonant Frequency Technology to measure 2,800 of your body's key biomarkers. Using NRF, they can find and correct the cause of your weight problem by measuring factors affecting weight gain, including metabolism, fat burning, fat storage, appetite, detoxification, and hormonal regulation. It's safe, fast, easy, and effective, and you won't walk around hungry or have cravings. It's even doctor supervised. Schedule a body composition analysis and consultation. You can be transformed in 40 days guaranteed. This is a limited time offer, so they can't wait to see you look great.
So call 888-718-7077. That's 888-718-7077. Or visit njthin.com. That's njthin.com.
Good afternoon and welcome to Mental Health Matters. I'm your host, Larry Cartwright, and my co-host is Tracy Ivey. And Tracy's working the board today, so, you know, we give her a lot of credit for that.
For the first time.
Yeah, for the first time, and she's doing well. This is NAMI's Hour, compliments at Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, and NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness. There is a chapter of NAMI in every county in the state, every state in the union, and overseas. It's in every county in the state of New Jersey, I fail to say. In Hunterdon County, where we are, we're all volunteers. We work out of our houses. We have no paid staff, no office, and we use our own phones. And as someone once told me, it's not far to commute when you go from the kitchen to the living room or the family room. So anyway, what we do to try to help people with a mental health issue is we have a lot of programs. We have Family to Family, which is a 12-week program for families who have someone in their family, or they know someone, or they live next door to someone, or work with someone who has a mental illness. And in that class, we try to let them know about medications, side effects, what to do, what not to do, what to say, what not to say in certain situations. And it gives the person an opportunity to feel what it's like to be the one afflicted with mental illness and what they're going through. We also have a support group, meets once a month, the third Thursday of every month from 7 to, I think it's 8:30. Depends, it may go longer depending if people need it. And that's in 52 East Main Street in Flemington. And we have various other classes, and we have a basic class for people who have children up to age 18 who have all sorts of different problems. You know, it could be ADHD, which is now considered a mental health issue. And there, you know, anything that they may have, but it's for parents, for children. And today, So, I'm sorry, if you really wanted to reach out to us, let me give you the phone number. It's 908-284-0500. That's 908-284-0500. Now, today, we are very privileged. I am thrilled to have Robin Marks, who I think is still an outreach coordinator at Princeton House. Is that
yes,
right?
That's correct.
Larry. All right. I have it right. I'm not going to ask you my favorite question. Robin has been on before with people from Princeton House, and I always ask her, you know, a question about Princeton House. But today, the topic is recovery, and it's Robin's story pertaining to recovery. And I will say that Robin mentioned to me a couple weeks ago that September is Recovery Month, and I had never heard of that. And I was in a meeting last Thursday, and it was brought up that the Hunterdon County Freeholders passed a resolution, pardon me, recognizing September as a recovery month in the county. So I thought that was pretty awesome. So quickly, how were you since the last time we met?
I'm doing very well, and thank you so much for this opportunity to share my story.
Well, I think it's, you know, very enlightening to hear someone in recovery speaking about their story. And I think that it's awesome that you wanted to come on and do it. I really do. So if you just take your time, all right, and tell your story. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to ask a lot of questions. I will ask some, I obviously. You know me better than that. You know, I will ask some. But you know, basically when it started, how it started, why it started, that sort of thing. And, you know, if you can, you can, you know, take us up to present day.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you. My name is Robin, and I'm a recovering alcoholic. The current trend is to say I'm a person in long-term recovery. I have 29 years of sober time. I last picked up a drink January 2nd, 1987, which seems like like when you say 1987,
right.
It seems like so long ago. But it's amazing that I can even say this because there was a point in my life I couldn't go a day without a drink.
Mm-hmm.
So to say 29 years is amazing. And I'm a person that got sober through AA, and how they say this is what was it like, what happened, and what it's like now. And so that's a story I want to bring you on.
Okay.
Before I even start, though, I just want to say that not only am I a recovering person, I'm also a mother.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a professional. I've been working in the mental health field for over 35 years. I'm a person in a community. I'm the lady in ShopRite. I'm the PTA mom. I'm much more than I am just a woman in recovery, but I couldn't be anything more unless I was the woman in recovery.
Right.
So what it was, and I'm going to hopefully be also a myth buster. I grew up in New Jersey. I grew up in a nice, affluent community. I was a child during the 60s. And if you remember the 60s time, or think of the TV show Ad Men, my father was an advertising man. And he would come home at 5 o'clock, and we would have cocktails and cheese and crackers. And this was just the environment that I grew up in. It was also a time in New Jersey when the drinking age turned 18 when I became a young adult. So this is environment. It was my natural mother and father. They never divorced. I had two siblings. All of us were fine, regular person in the neighborhood. I just came from an environment that loved to drink. You celebrated with alcohol. You cheered things. And it's not to say that either of my parents were alcoholics. It was just more of what the culture was like then.
See, my father was an alcoholic.
And he was an alcoholic?
Yeah. I remember when I was about 4 or 5. And we lived in Brooklyn at the time in an apartment building. So we were on the 5th floor of an apartment house complex. And he threw the Christmas tree out the window.
Mm-hmm.
And that is one of the strongest memories I have of my childhood in Brooklyn. was him throwing the Christmas tree out the window, you know.
So, Trauma will do that. Yep.
Exactly. You know, and you take a 4 or 5 year old kid, Christmas is like, you know, the milestone in their life. And, you know, to have your father come home smashed and throw the Christmas tree out the window, you know.
That's amazing.
It's not easy.
That's adult
you know?
Children of alcoholics. Yeah. Sure. Yep, you right. carry that.
Right. Yeah. I am also an adult child of an alcoholic. My mother was an alcoholic, and one drink was all she needed every night. She was high-functioning, but she turned – it was Jekyll and Hyde, the personality change. Mm-hmm. So let's hear more about your story, Robin.
So that's the environment I grew up in. And then my first drink was when I was 13, and it was eighth grade. And it was – somebody had a party. The parents were home. And at that point, somebody had smuggled in a bottle of Boone's Farm apple wine, which was all the rage then. And probably about 7 of us went outside of the party to take a swig off of this one bottle. Well, in hindsight, looking back, I started drinking alcoholically from that very first time because other people taking it, it's like, ugh, God, this is... Ugh. Where I'm watching the bottle go around, hoping that it's still another sip in there left for me. And it's like, don't drink it all. I want another sip. And it's my makeup. When alcohol hits my system, my body, it's the pleasure pathways open up, the dopamine, everything, and I just want more. The saying in AA is, one is too many and 1,000 is never enough. And that is my creed.
I've never heard that saying, yeah.
But that's it. If I have one, I have it until I can no longer drink. So so I in eighth grade, you don't have that opportunity to drink all the time. And then went through high school, and then you start drinking beer, and then the drinking age was 18, so you could go to the bars. And alcoholism or drug addiction does not, like, slap you upside the face right away. It's usually a progressive disease. And then in college, it was like, well, I was a partying kid. You know, there's a kegger. Okay, I'm going. And the first inkling that something was the matter was when I was 20 years old. I was now a second year of college. And I went to a Halloween party, which in college is like a binge weekend. And we were drinking, and we were all in costume. And we all, believe it or not, went as shower utensils. So I was a bar of soap, where somebody else was a scrub
brush. I can't picture you, Robin, as a bar of soap. Okay,
we cut it out of cardboard, and it said ivory down the front, and it had the strings over the top. And we all went, and we were dancing all night long, just drinking the beer. And all of a sudden, I woke up walking down the street at 2 o'clock in the morning in Bridgeport, Connecticut, having no idea where I was, what I had been doing. I still had this ivory soap cardboard on me, but it's like, wow, where is it? Where is everybody? What happened? So I made my way back to the dorm, and then I made an appointment with the counselor at the college. Now, this is the early 70s, so people didn't have a full grasp of addiction disorders then. And I went, you know, kind of snuck out of my room, didn't tell any of my friends I was going because the blackout really worried me. And I went to the counselors, and I said, I just woke up. I'm walking, and I woke up. I just came to consciousness. Mm-hmm. And the counselor told me, goes, well, sometimes your body falls asleep before your mind, or sometimes your mind falls asleep before your body. And I go, oh, good. So I hung on to that definition because I don't have a problem with alcohol. My brain just needs to go to sleep sometimes, but my body will keep on going. That was a great explanation to me. So then I graduated college, and I started a career, and I wouldn't drink during the day, but I really would get out of work in a psychiatric hospital, pull into a store, they used to have cocktails for two in a little can, and I would drink that on the ride just from the hospital to my home, which was about a half an hour, just because I haven't been able to drink all day. So I just kind of want to, like, get something before I get to go home and really drink. And again, it wasn't a problem per se that it interfered with anything in my life. You know, certain things would happen. Like one time my brother pulled me aside, and I was probably 25, and he said, you know, Rob, it's okay to get drunk, but it's not okay to always be the first one to get drunk. And I go, oh, okay. You know, so, okay, I'll keep that in mind.
I'll be the second one from now on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right, I'll watch everybody first. Yeah. And there are things that I didn't want to get hammered. That's the part that I think people sometimes without an addiction disorder don't understand. It's not like my goal was to go out and get hammered. I just kept on drinking, and it got hammered all the time, and I got drunk, and I would get mad at myself for being drunk, and I didn't want to get drunk. That wasn't my intention, but if there was an open bottle, I was going to drink from it, and, you know, pour it in a glass, whatever. And then, so it got to the point that in your late 20s, developmentally, that's a time in which you start finding a partner. You start kind of honing your career a little bit more. And I was still out there. I was the party girl. And it's like, what do you mean you want to kind of settle down with a guy? What do you mean you want to get married? Come on, there's a lot of life to live. I would try to then do things like, well, I'd put my drink in the other room at a party so that I could chat with people, and I'd have to go to the other room to get my drink, just because if it was in my hand, I'd drink it. So if I made it, and every alcoholic does this. You try these little things, these little tricks with yourself to, maybe this will help me. Well, really, if you're at the point where you're always getting drunk, and this is something that is not intentional, and it's starting to really affect your relationship with people, because it's like, does Robin have to come? She's going to get drunk again. And so all of a sudden, I wouldn't be invited to something. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, oh, that's because they're, all, you know, they just don't know how to party. That's it. And so you don't see those things, or you minimize those, or you intellectualize why that's occurring in your life. And so everybody started doing the things that later 20-year-olds do. And I found myself more and more isolated, which gave me more time alone, which is, then I'll just go home and drink. You know, I'll finish up work and I'll just go home. And then I would just have a bottle of Carlos Rossi. Nothing but the best for this gal, let me tell you. So I was a wine and vodka drinker. And it could have been beer, it could have been whiskey. Really, it was whatever I had, but it usually at hand, I had wine or vodka. Because somehow or other, I heard vodka doesn't smell on your breath. And so I held on to that one. Then I was about 30 years old. And now all of my friends have gotten married. And their careers, some people have gone back to school. They've gotten their master's. Or they're just flourishing in their career. And I'm still working in mental health. Then I left at one point and I said, you know, maybe I'm drinking so much because I work in the psychiatric field. Maybe that's what's making me drink. Again, it's external things. It couldn't be me.
Right.
And I became a concierge in a hotel, and which was exactly the wrong thing to do. And in AA,
you know, it's can like only imagine.
People would get off the elevator, and here I was in the VIP lounge, and they would go, well, what's there to do in town? It's like, well, let me tell you, there's this great bar down here, and this one is a piano lounge, and this one, you know, this concert, they serve you cocktails while you're doing this. And all of a sudden, I started getting sick, and I thought, oh, what's this? And I went to the doctors, and I said, you know, I'm just throwing up. I would wake up in the morning, not necessarily with a horrible hangover, but I'd just be walking around during the day, and I would start throwing up. And it's like, wow, what's the matter with me? So I went to a doctor, and he took some blood tests. And you've got to remember, I worked in mental health for many years. And I said, I don't know what it is. And he called me 2 days later. So just think, if any time a doctor calls you at home, the first thing is your heart races up to your throat because it's like, no doctor calls you at home unless this is critical. And so God loved this man, and I wish I remembered his name because he truly saved my life. He said to me, Robin, I got your test results back. And I said, yeah. And he goes, and I have a few questions to ask you. I go, okay. And he goes, I was just wondering, you said that you drank, you know, a cocktail every day. And it's like, of course I minimized what I drank when I gave my sure. physical. I'm not going to tell him. Carlos and I polish off a bottle every night. And he said, I just want to ask you if when you wake up in the morning, do you ever regret what you did the night before? And I thought, oh, I know what list he's going down. And I go, well, have I ever regretted? I said, haven't you? And
it's a little smart deflecting.
Yeah. And then he said, I'd like to see you in my office. And I said, okay. So we set an appointment. I thought, oh, the jig is up. Somebody's going to catch me on this. So I went on a binge. I thought, he's going to tell me to stop drinking. And so I drank from that moment until 2 days later when I went into his office. And he said, the test results are back, and you have cirrhosis of the liver. You're 30 years old, and you have 2 to 3 years to live if you keep it up like this.
Oh.
And I said, I started crying, and I lived in San Diego at the time. And I said, well, what about the Padres, the baseball team, the Padres? And he goes, what about the Padres? And I go, how can I ever go to a baseball game again if I can't drink beer? And he looked at me, and I said, and I'll never get married. And he goes, why won't you get married? And I said, what am I going to toast at my wedding, Perrier? And that's when he looked at me, and he said, I think you better talk to somebody. Really, what was your first clue there?
Padres and Perrier. That's the title of your book.
Yeah, there we go. So he did send me to a counselor who said, okay, well, from your test results, you have to stop drinking. I said, I can't stop drinking. I drink every day. I don't want to stop drinking. I wake up, and this is really sad, but the very first thought every morning was, what do I have in my house to drink? The very first thing. And then if I didn't remember, if I was in a blackout from drinking the night before, I'd have to wake up, go around my house to see if there's anything left in any of the bottles. And not that I even drank necessarily in the mornings, unless it was a day off. Then I would have to, like, go to the liquor store at 8 in the morning on a Saturday morning to replenish my supply to have it. So the idea of giving up drinking, I thought, oh, my God, I'm going to be a miserable son of a bitch. This is going to be horrible, and I'll never laugh again, and I'll never find anybody because who wants to be with a recovering alcoholic, and my life is horrible. And so I went to the counselor, and he said, well, you should go inpatient. I said, I can't. I work at a place that didn't offer sick days. And he goes, well, then do a weekend. And I said, what's a weekend going to do? Because I'll drink 5 days, and then I won't drink during the weekend. Then there's 5 days of drinking again. And he goes, well, then I guess there's an AA meeting every day at multiple times, so go to an AA meeting every day. Then I go, where do I even find an AA meeting? I thought that it was like this secret cult someplace that holds you know.
Yeah.
And he goes, there's very intensive meeting lists that you can get all over the place. So we charted a course, and I went to my first AA meeting, but I couldn't go home from his appointment because if I went home, I'd drink. So I had to leave his place, and I sat in a diner and cried till 8 o'clock at night over a cup of coffee, and then went to the AA meeting. And I walk in, and everybody's laughing, and everybody's, hi, how are you? And I go, oh, these can't be alcoholics. I know alcoholism. I know that devil in my soul. It has reared up a few times over the last few years, like, you're not a good person. You can't control this. You're really worthless. You're selfish for wanting this alcohol over all other things. And so nobody could be happy if they really were as bad as I was. And I sat down, and then they started a preamble. We decided to that. Well, of course, I've been in it for 29 years. Can't remember the first step right now. That our lives had become unmanageable, and I thought they were talking right to me. It's like I would not be sitting in an AA meeting if my life was manageable, and everything everybody said, I really thought it was directed right to me because they were speaking to my soul. They were telling my secrets out in front of everybody. They were talking about making friends and moving friends and moving geographically or doing things differently, just trying not to drink or to be able to drink better or this group. And so I again was overwhelmed by this meeting. I thought, oh, my God, there are people like me out there. And it was a very freeing experience to realize that. But realization and putting the rubber to the road are two different things. Going to that AA meeting did not have me stop drinking. And they always said, less than 30 days, please raise your hand. And I kept on going to that AA meeting, and I kept on drinking. And every day I'd raise my hand again, and they'd go, Robin, you've been coming to this meeting now for half a year. You haven't hit 30 days yet. And I would never drink the day of the meeting, that one meeting. And I said, no, maybe I'd get a week under my belt, and then I'd celebrate. I'd celebrate recovery by drinking.
By drinking.
So I couldn't get 30 days, and then I really thought that I was really worthless, that I couldn't do this. And people were celebrating 30 days, 60 days, a year, 5 years, 10 years. And after about 8 months of going to the meeting and really feeling shamed that I could not put together more than 2 weeks of time without a drink, I just said, forget it. I'm going to die of cirrhosis of the liver. And I started drinking heavily again, and the throwing up came back. And it turns out that when you have cirrhosis, your liver isn't functioning. So when you digest food, the liver can't process it, so it has to get rid of it. So my liver was starting to shut down, and I was starting to get broken blood vessels on my under my eyes and on my nose. And I saw my parents for Christmas. They lived in Florida. And it was Christmas Eve, and I went into a blackout from drinking. And the next Christmas morning, my buzzer of my condo is going off. And it was my brother who was going to drive me to the airport, and I wasn't even packed. My Christmas presents for my parents weren't wrapped. And so I just threw everything in a bag, and I flew out to Florida. And I get there, and my parents, these are the cocktail and the cheese and cracker crowd. And so it's like, Rob, it's so good to see you. Let's stop and have a cocktail someplace. And it's like, now we're talking. So they took me out to dinner, and now I can't eat anymore. I can't digest anything. I can drink, but I can't eat. And so I said, okay. So we went out to dinner, and I'm looking at the menu. It's like, oh, what's going to stay down? And I saw lobster on the menu, and I love lobster. I thought that was slippery, so I thought that would just go right down. So they bring me to a very nice restaurant, and we're in a leather booth that's shaped like a horseshoe. And I'm in between Mom and Dad. And so I start eating, and we're drinking, and we're having a wonderful time. And when you drink alcoholically, when you start drinking, it settles your soul. So it's like, oh, thank God I've got this alcohol running through me again. I feel normal. I feel not normal when I don't have alcohol, but I feel normal with it. Well, there's a phrase in AA that says incomprehensible demoralization. And that means that you cannot think of a worse thing to happen. And so I was between my parents, and my food starts coming up on me, and I can't get out of the booth, and we're in a fancy restaurant, and all of a sudden I have to vomit. And so what do I do in the fancy restaurant? I reach over and grab the bread basket, and I throw up on the side into the bread basket. And my father looks at me, and he goes, you don't look so good. He goes, maybe we should get something to settle your stomach. And I said, yeah. And he goes, maybe like a Bailey's or something. And I said, yes, a Bailey's is just what I needed. Where inside I'm going, I'm an alcoholic. I'm a drunk dad. You just don't understand this. But please, can I have that Bailey's? Yeah. So then we went back to their house and we unwrapped Christmas presents. And I went into a blackout again. And I woke up the next day, and my mother said to me, why aren't you taking the presents that are yours out from underneath the tree? Well, I didn't remember which presents were mine. And there was a set of towels underneath that Christmas tree she had given to me that I don't remember unwrapping. So her feelings are hurt because I'm not taking the towels. Right. And actually, I still have one of those towels today because it's a good
right,
reminder.
Right.
So, could I ask a question?
Sure, absolutely.
Who may not understand, I don't totally understand. When you say a blackout, you're actually functioning and doing things. I thought blackout meant you were passed out, but you're functioning.
Yes, right. like the guy in my college said, my brain has fallen asleep, but my body's still going.
Okay.
And it's like a form of amnesia. Okay. You can never get those memories back. Mm-hmm. And so in front of my parents vomiting, and then that was Christmas time, and then I can't eat. I came back to my home then, flew back out of Florida, and I thought, oh, the jig is up. I'm now 1 year. The guy gave me 2 to 3 years to live, and I've almost exhausted that first year. And so I drank through New Year's Eve, and I went back to that meeting, that AA meeting, January 2nd, 1987, and it was like, put a fork in me, I'm done. And I, having tried it so many times, it's like, really? Am I really done with this? But it's like, really, it was do or die. And I kept on going to the meetings, and all of a sudden I got 30 days. I got 30 days after a year and 30 days. I finally get 30 days sober. And then I got 35, and I would be at work, and I'd go, I'd make the computer, like, how many hours is that? Have I not had a drink? Really, 35 days without a drink? And all of a sudden, I started feeling better. And I was working at the hotel then, and they had a very large lobby, and somebody made me laugh, and it echoed in the lobby. And I thought, oh, my God, you do laugh when you're sober. And all of these things were so new that it was like a revelation to me. You really can function, and you can go through a day without drinking. And if you have the urge to drink, there's many people. There's a huge support system. Do you know there's 23 million people in the United States in recovery? 23 million. So the support system for this is wonderful, and there's no judgment to it.
Right.
So I kept on all those people who had reached out and said, you know, give me a call or if times get rough. And so I did. I made those calls. And I got a sponsor that was really good, and she took me out to dinner. I said, I don't know how to go out to dinner and not drink. And she said, okay, let's do that. And we went out, and we had a wonderful time. And it's like you can have a whole meal and not have a wine and a cordial and a cocktail and all of this. And so little by little, I got time and then a little bit more time. And then I met a man, not in AA, but I just met a man 6 months sober. And I saw mutual friends introduced us. And he said, can I get you a drink? And I thought, oh, here goes. Here's this man I think is attractive and nice. And I said, no, I'm sorry, I don't drink. And I thought, there, he's going to be gone. And he goes, oh, I normally don't drink either. And I go, why? Because the only reason I would think you wouldn't drink is if you're in recovery. He says, I'm a diabetic, and I'd rather have like a piece of cake some days instead of the sugar content of a glass of wine. And in my head, I thought, marry me. Alcohol is not an issue to you. And lo and behold, he is my husband, and we just celebrated 28 years of marriage.
Awesome.
So congratulations.
You know, you mentioned before about vodka.
Mm-hmm.
I was 17. I graduated high school. I went to service. And after basic and all the training and yada, yada, you know, a group of guys, and everybody goes down and drinks. Well, I never drank. I hated the smell of beer. I can't stand the taste of beer. So they said, well, why don't you try cherry vodka? I said, okay. I don't know if you've ever had cherry vodka, but cherry vodka, you don't taste. You just drink it. It's like cherry soda, and it tastes great. And I'm on this stool, and I'm sucking them down like there's no tomorrow. And I had to go to the bathroom. So I get up off the stool, and I fall face down on my face. That's it. I'm done. I can't move. I can't get up. I'm finished. That was the only time I drank after that. Because I have an addictive personality, and I was smoking, and it's been 27 years since I quit smoking, but I used to smoke a pack and a half a day, and right up until 27 years ago, but it's just drinking just never, after that one time, you know, and I'm saying, well, like, wow. And most people, you know, you go to a bar, I don't even like the smell of a bar. Because they got the smell of beer and all that, you know. And I go, oh, God, I can't take it.
Yeah.
But the cherry vodka, and they go, oh, I try cherry vodka. Yeah, okay, I'm throwing them down like no tomorrow. And then I can't get up, you know. Yeah. When I do get up, I fall flat on my face. So I figured that was the end of that, you know. Mm-hmm. So the rest of the time I was in the service, I didn't drink. But I did smoke. And I'm not comparing quitting smoking with quitting drinking. But I know I must have quit smoking 25 times, maybe 20, 30 times. And it was, you know, a lot of times, New Year's Eve, oh, yeah, New Year's Eve, you know, resolutions. I'm going to quit smoking. Yeah, that was good till like 12 noon on New Year's Day, and then I'd start smoking again, you know. But they put me on an operating table, turned me that my head was facing the floor, and they scraped my vocal cords from polyps. And they told me that was the only time they could do it. After that, they would have to take my vocal cords out, and I'd have to go through a voice box, you know. And I'm thinking, with my big mouth, that's never going to happen, you know. So I quit. But it's just, you know, like I said, it is addictive. We used to go, when I worked, a group of us would go down to Atlantic City. I wouldn't take any credit cards with me. I only took a certain amount of money. I'd make sure that my car had gas and tolls to get, because that time you know, didn't have Easy Pass back on a turnpike and a parkway. And that was it. If I ran out of money, that was it. I would just sit there in a corner and watch people, you know, because I do have this, you know, and I mean, the house would have been gone, everything would have been gone, you know, so, and to this day, I'm still that way, but I learned to control all that, you know, but I can appreciate giving up. You know, when you, and then fall back, you know.
Again and again and again.
Right. And I'm not saying that quitting smoking is like quitting drinking, but it's still addiction,
addiction, exactly.
You know, right. And, you know, it also has an effect on your body, too, you know, on your lungs and throat and everything else, you know, so.
Yeah.
So anyway, you got married and you're still married and.
And I'm still married. And then it was like, well, what about children? And so I had two children, and now I have a year or 2 years or 3 years. And each year it's like, wow, I have years now. I mean, when you talk to somebody with an addiction, well, even cigarette smoking, it's like, wow, it's been 28 years that I have stopped doing something that I liked, that when I did, it opened up these pleasure pathways that just said, yay, we're finally doing it. It's even somebody who is a dieter and they go on a stringent diet and they can hear the sound of the cookie tin, and they hear that sound and it's the trigger that you want that cookie. Those sort of things. I'll walk into a bar, I'll hear somebody on a summer's day open up a can of beer, and some days my mouth will salivate still because it just shot me filled with that pleasure.
Exactly. If I'm near someone who lights up a Marlboro, I have to walk away.
Yeah.
To this day.
Yeah.
So I know exactly what you're saying,
And so there is a biological base. It is now termed a disease. It's something either you are born with or you're not. Mm-hmm. And then you have to have environmental factors and also the a culture that is okay with that. And I had all of those. I was in a culture that loved alcohol. I was biologically inclined to become addicted. And so when you have all these factors going kind of against you or for you when it's not a problem yet.
Right.
And then so when my son was in seventh grade, so the kids just knew mom didn't drink. And we moved to a new town, and nobody knew me as the party girl. I was in my 20s. Well, all of a sudden, I married, and my name changed. And so I was a whole different person than who I was in my 20s. And I used to play bunco with a bunch of women. And at one point, somebody was talking about dieting. And I said, oh, that's exactly how I feel about alcohol. And she goes, what do you mean? And I said, well, I'm a recovering alcoholic. She goes, you are not. And it's like, what do you think we look like? and I said, yes, I am. And she just didn't know what to do with that information. And same with my kids just knew I didn't drink. Mom just doesn't drink. So my son was in seventh grade, and he was having those drug and alcohol lessons that you have in health class. So he had it, and I thought, well, this is an opportune time. And he was in the van with me. You pick up the kids, And I said, so you're learning about alcoholism? And he said, yes. And I said, well, I'm an alcoholic. And he goes, oh, be quiet. And I go, no, I am. That's why I don't drink. And he looked at me like I'd grown another head because I know how it's delivered and how kind of like this weak-willed, kind of pathetic person sometimes is portrayed. Mm-hmm. And they leave out the fact that it has no discrimination. It doesn't have a color, an age bracket, a socioeconomic bracket. It's all walks of life. So for this seventh grader to all of a sudden look at his mother as an alcoholic, but just was mind-blowing. And I don't think I said, if you ever want to talk about it or you have any questions about it, and he didn't touch that one for years. And he kind of tucked it away.
Right.
Where my daughter, when I told her, and I would go to recovery rallies and do things, and she was the one that wanted to participate in it. Oh, I'll walk. Mm-hmm. I'll go to New York City with you and go to a recovery rally.
Right.
And
were you going to meetings every day when your kids were growing up?
Not when my kids were growing up.
Okay.
By the time I had my kids growing up, I had already had about 5 to 7 years sober,
mm-hmm.
maybe even 10.
Okay.
And so then I went back into working in behavioral health again, and I always worked as an addiction specialist. Oh, who saw that one coming? <You know? laughs> So in a lot of ways, my work brought me to meetings, or it brought me face to face with a person who's walking in the door just going, I'll never do this. And I'd always say, there is hope. There really is. And that's what that's a message I want to bring, is there is hope.
Absolutely.
And people do recover.
Right. Absolutely. We have to take a quick break. You're listening to Mental Health Matters, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Home Instead Senior Care. It's our passionate dedication to creating personal relationships between our clients and our caregivers. Visit our website at www.homeinstead.com/325.
You've got a friend.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterton at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterton, the voice for mental health in Hunterton County. Welcome back to Mental Health Matters. My host, Larry Cartwright, and my co-host is Tracy Ivey. And we've been very, very fortunate to have with us Robin Marks, who's an outreach coordinator at Princeton House. And she's been telling her story about her recovery and the years it took to recover and the years she's been recovered. And like I said earlier in the show, that she reminded me that September is recovery month, which I had never heard of. And the county freeholders in Hunterton County passed a resolution recognizing September in the county as recovery month. So Robin has just got us to where her daughter wanted to go to outreach programs and stuff to help Robin, you know, with her recovery. And she had been 5 to almost maybe 7, 8, 10 years but recovered at this point.
Yeah. By the time she became aware and socially conscious, she was like 17, so I was probably 20-plus years recovered. So when you were asking about the meetings, every time in AA they say that a meeting happens when two alcoholics, recovering alcoholics, talk about recovery. And so since I worked in a program and spoke to alcoholics, sometimes on the phone, sometimes here or there, every time was a reminder why I'm clean and sober. And to see fresh anguish on someone's face is just goes to your heart, because they have to go through all those steps that I just, you know, where right. You think you're not worthy and worthlessness. One of the key things, I really was hopeless. I had no hope. I there were times that I thought, you know, I might be better off dead, because not that I was suicidal, but I really thought I'd be better off dead and everybody wouldn't have to worry and all that. So I was hopeless, and now I'm hopeful, and I'm so full of hope, I can share this with other right. people who need to replenish their bucket of hope.
Well, you know, I pardon me, I give you a lot of credit, because it's one thing to talk in an AA meeting mm-hmm. where you're surrounded by everybody else who's going through the same thing. It's another thing to come on the radio and talk and tell your story to countless people who may not be alcoholic.
Yes.
And that, I, you know, that is, to me, very, very brave. And, you know, like I said, it's one thing to talk in a group like, you know, like we have support groups for mental health. So it's for families to come around and they can talk about their issues, because everybody in there has somebody that has an issue. And it's the same thing with AA.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Everybody there has an alcoholic issue, whether it's 30 days or 30 years.
Right.
So they all understand each other.
Mm-hmm.
But for you to come on here and talk, although we are friends and, you know, known each other for a while, mm-hmm. That sort of secondary. You know, because yeah. you're telling your story. You know, you're not here as a outreach coordinator for Princeton House, you mm-hmm. know, with a therapist with you or whatever. So, you know, I give you a lot of credit. I really do.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Know. Larry and
me
I
too.
Have yeah. thank you. had this conversation that I come in and you know, tell my story. And at this point, I'm solid with my recovery and who I am, and I can do this. I couldn't have done this even 10 years ago. And, you know, you feel like you've disappointed 1,000 people, and both my parents have passed, and now my children are adults. And so there's no one that, and it's a story of triumph. So why would I be afraid to tell this story? And yet I was.
Sure. But that's natural.
Yeah.
And what do you hope to accomplish by telling the story? Tell me about some of your hopes for other people.
Thank you. That's actually what drove me to tell the story, mm-hmm. is because it is Recovery Month and because there is a spotlight on recovery. And the epidemic with the narcotics right now, and 1 in 10 people are alcoholics or have a chemical dependency of either alcohol or substances. You go to the grocery store, and the grocery store has 150, 200 people in it at a time, and 1 in 10 is either in recovery or using. That's a tremendous amount of people. And so sometimes, and part of this also, there was a wonderful movie that I would recommend to anybody called The Anonymous People. Part of Alcoholics Anonymous is the anonymous part.
Right.
And part of it was that it was a code that you didn't go outside of the meeting and tell about your neighbor, Harry. You know, and that was a code. But it was also anonymous to people that you trusted. It just, you kept your AA, you know, nice and tight and in a box. So if you're asking a young person to recover and there's no role models of what recovery looks like, then what to strive for? I don't know anybody in recovery where they might be bumping into people all day long in recovery, but because they're anonymous, you wouldn't know. So the movie Anonymous People talks about all these people that are coming out to say, I'm one of these people in recovery, and I've led a very interesting life, part of it as an active alcoholic, and almost half of my life now has been in recovery. So I've been in recovery longer than I was drinking now, which is, like, blows my mind.
But it's awesome, you know.
It is.
Right.
And so I want to be the person that I heard this lady on the radio, or I saw this speaker, or I you know, and she said there was hope. So that's the message I want to bring out. Whether you've had a drink already today or already used a drug today, there's the rest of the day, there's all tomorrow, and nobody's asking more than one day from you.
Right.
Just one day. And then that old slogan, one day at a time, really is just one day. Nobody's asking for anything more than that.
In the last 3 minutes that we have, how would someone find an AA group?
The easiest way, you could go in your phone book. You could Google AA meetings in Flemington,
okay.
Hunterdon. You could AA meetings any place. I know people that are in recovery that has an app on their phone, and you hit the app and it tells you where the closest AA meetings is to you.
Hmm.
There's a lot of social media. There's things that if you're trying to get clean and sober, a trigger app. So you put in the places where if you were buying drugs off the street, that your phone with a GPS would tell you if you're close to where you used to take your drugs from, and would alert you. There are a lot of so AA or NA, Narcotics Anonymous.
Right. Right.
And so you could call what is it now, 411?
Yeah, I believe it is.
Really, and I'd be remiss if I didn't do this. Or you could call my phone. I am the addiction specialist at Princeton House, and my phone number is 609-902-3006, and that's my cell phone. Or if you're looking for treatment, and I do suggest if you have the option to detox from alcohol in a facility, just because there's medical complications that could arise. And that number for Princeton House inpatient is 800-242-2550.
Thank you, Robin. I do appreciate it. And if all else fails and you live in Hunterdon County, you can go to the Hunterdon Medical Center because they have AA meetings all the time there.
All the time.
And you can check at the information desk, and they can tell you when they are.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're a very brave woman, as I said before, and I still feel that way for telling your story. And I can't thank you enough for coming on because, you know, the outlook is, like we were talking earlier, if you can help one person.
Exactly.
That's what it's all about, you know. Whether it's with us with mental health issues or you with alcoholism or NA or, you know, narcotics or whatever, if you can help one person,
mm-hmm.
that's the goal. And that's why we do what we do.
That is it.
And that's it. So, and you're going to come back again. You don't have to tell your story, but you can bring somebody else with you. Okay, how's that?
Yeah.
You can bring somebody from Princeton House with you.
Okay.
All right?
Okay.
With that, we are here again next week. Same time, same station. So, and remember, folks, mental health really does matter. Thank you again, Robin.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Jason Wirt.
Six individuals were transported to the hospital. Three were treated and released for a total of nine individuals. One is in critical condition. One individual is in serious condition.
Houston's police chief talking about the injuries related to a shooting this morning when a lawyer opened fire at random people. Police have identified the shooter as lawyer Nathan Desai, who was angry that his law firm had gone under. Eyes turned to Hofstra University for tonight's big debate between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. Republican vice presidential candidate Mike Pence says he's looking forward to it.
I'm looking forward to seeing this good man, my running mate, step on that stage and present his message to make America great again to the American people.
Walmart apologizing for not making a cake for a police officer's retirement party because a cake decorator said it was racist. Walmart has not responded to USA Radio about whether those people are still employed. USA Radio News.
Hey everybody, singer-songwriter Brett Watts here. If you're like me, always on the go, and don't have time to stay as healthy as we would like by eating all the right foods, well, I found an incredibly simple and easy way to get all my fruits and vegetables at once. It's called Daily Lift, L-I-F-T. It's a superfoods energy drink mix supplement that fills the gaps between what you eat and what you don't always have time to eat. This unique formula is packed with 16-plus fruits and vegetables and 59 superfoods. No MSG or GMO. It's all natural and organic. Nature's best combination of antibiotics, enzymes, probiotics, and beneficial allergies in one powdered drink mix. Comes in two flavors, mint and berry, and both delicious. Daily Lift nutrients help balance your body's pH levels and boost your energy naturally. And it's safe for kids. So let's fire up that immune system and stay focused. Go to www.onedailylift.com. That's one, O-N-E, dailylift.com. Onedailylift.com, and let's get healthy.
Officials at Hofstra University putting the final touches on tonight's debate.
Hofstra University President Stuart Rabinowitz says hundreds of students will be at the debate tonight and many more will be part of viewing parties here.
Our real point in doing this is to let them know and inspire them to be active participants in the democratic process. It just is a shame so few young people vote.
The students in awe of the scores of reporters, photographers, and media trucks just spread across parking lots and fields.
We're so excited. I feel like we've been waiting for it ever since we got to school.
Thousands of protesters expected later on from a handful of different groups. At Hofstra University, Scott Pringle, NBC News Radio, New York.
Famed astrophysicist Stephen Hawking says he's afraid of aliens and says we should be too. In a new documentary, Hawking says humans should be careful if we were to ever receive a message from aliens. He said responding to such a message could lead us to be conquered by advanced alien life forms. USA Radio News, I'm Jason Wirt.
Stay healthy from head to wallet with Wellness Plus with Plenty at Rite Aid. you can earn Plenty Points on hundreds of specially marked products each week on your favorite brands. Every 100 Plenty Points equals a dollar off your next purchase. Sign up today in-store or online at Friday.com. And that's just one of the four ways to save. Now through October 1st, earn 1,000 Plenty Points when you spend $30 on select P&G products. See Rite Aid.com and circular for details.
A California couple being sought by police after they physically assaulted a teenage autistic boy. Here's the story.
The Newport Beach Police Department says a 16-year-old autistic boy was sitting in the back of his mother's parked car taking pictures of the area with his iPad. A man and a woman passed by his car and became upset when he took their picture. A woman yelled at the teen and shoved him several times. The boy's mother intervened and explained that the boy had autism and entertains himself by taking photos with the iPad. Police want to talk to the couple, and if you have any information, you're urged to call the cops. Jason Campadonia, Los Angeles.
Police in New York having another protest today against the mayor because of a lack of a contract.
They'll be there to confront